Hey there, welcome to our future walk. We are going to jump into the year 2050 and I'm going to show you around the city of Bath. I've recorded a whole series of dialogues for you to listen to, and there's also some instructions, so do listen carefully because occasionally you'll need to pause the dialogue and move on to another location. The idea is that you don't ever need to stand still, you can keep walking, and it's about a 4 mile loop, so it should take you all in all around an hour and a half-ish. So I really hope you enjoy your journey around Bath. I hope you discover some new places, and I hope you really enjoy looking at Bath in the year 2050. Have fun! Welcome to my street. A lot has changed in the 50 years I've lived here. There are now very few cars on the roads. Here, there are none. Every roof is covered in solar panels, solar tubes, solar tiles, solar paint. Outside of the heritage zone, which is shrinking annually, all houses are now overclad with insulation. Windows are ground level, have insulated shutters to minimise heat loss in winter and heat gain in summer. Many windows at first floor have either been covered over partially or completely for the same reason. One of the biggest changes is in the purpose of the loft, which now has considerable water storage. Air and ground source heat pumps require tanks. In addition, we collect rainwater from the roof for a variety of purposes. Some is treated, but most is used for irrigation and flushing. We still have mains water, but it is metered and expensive, so mostly try and utilise what we can gather. To maximise the storage, we have switched many of the floor and roof joists around. It turns out that while most floors in buildings are over-designed, roofs are typically under-designed. We use whatever was available to create the water storage. It's not uncommon to find baths and even pond liners up in the roof. We can no longer afford to fill and heat a bath, and it's more efficient to reuse it than pay the recycling charge. Of course, for a short while, people assumed they could increase the amount of storage in a roof without the expertise of an engineer, but when the ceiling joists failed after a heavy storm around the corner, which led to the failure of the first floor and the progressive failure of the house, people changed their minds. I was quite busy for a while, just assessing all my neighbours' properties, mostly on weekends and evenings. We didn't waste any of the collapsed building, as it was a 1950s concrete post and block prefab construction, which was designed to have a working life of just 20 years. We weren't able to reuse the materials for any primary structure, but we did use them to create a large communal composting pen. We also repurposed the timber floor and roof joists and overcladding that was added later to create a community composting toilet. While we all have our own toilets, solid waste is actually really, really valuable if well treated, but only when produced in sufficient quantity. As a result, individual households mostly failed when they tried to create composting toilets, but a community facility has flourished. Of course, not everyone chooses to use it, but enough to make it viable. The addition of good insulation and trace heating from solar panels makes it much more inviting. As you can see, engineers are busy, whether checking existing joists under increased loading, foraging for parts to make community facilities, or using their broader engineering skills to think of creative ways to optimise what is available for the local community. The aim is to continually upcycle what we have for better outcomes. Okay. Pause the recording until you are able to see the first of the two tunnels. I've always walked to work. When exercise became mandatory due to the marked health benefits and access to devices was limited until you'd recorded a set number of steps, most people use an exercise bike or treadmill, but I just kept walking. However, I picked up a habit during the lockdowns of the early 2020s where I tried to discover a new route with each walk. As foraging for materials has become more useful, I've reintegrated this approach into my daily walk, seeing what I can find. Today, I'll take you on what is a typical walk to work. The woods we're entering, as we set off, used to be fields for public recreation, but as we pledged to reforest spaces, it became woodland. You can roughly date the woods by the nature of the planting. It's still fairly regular, but the woods have moved away from monoculture and towards a more diverse selection of trees and biodiversity generally. I have to be honest, while I appreciate the increase in flying bugs and acknowledge their importance in our ecosystem, I did prefer it when they didn't constantly fly up your nose. As we walk through the trees, it's good to note what's going on. There is annual coppicing, which can be used, although other industries also want to use the timber. After storms, there is a window of opportunity to utilise any fallen wood. I can't believe people used to cut down trees and just leave them to rot. Everything is utilised now. We can also see some bamboo plantations. We are still experimenting with bamboo, but the speed at which it grows and its potential in building design has led to a boom in this crop. As the climate changes, species are starting to really flourish in the UK. However, legislation is tight on avoiding monocultures, and we are still limited in where it can grow until a richer diversity of plants and wildlife can be proven to grow with it. It seems amazing that I was researching this area almost 30 years ago. Back then, acquiring funding for research in bamboo was challenging due to its perceived limited application. But now, along with other renewable materials, most small-scale buildings are being constructed with these materials using template designs, which really don't need much engineering input. If we head this way, we can walk through the two tunnels. Originally, the tunnels were created for steam engines. They were left derelict for many years when the lines were closed, but they were reopened in 2013 as part of the cycle network. They are still used today, but we also use them to grow mushrooms, and during the heat waves, those with inadequate insulation and no way of cooling often use the tunnels as a way of staying cool. Okay, pause the recording there, and I'm afraid you got a bit of a hill ahead of you. I hope it's not too bad. If you don't want to do the hill, that is not a problem. You can skip the next bit and essentially just keep walking up the road, turn left, down into Wickham High Street, through the back of the station, and you'll be back on the route. But the view is phenomenal. So definitely worth going for the view if you want to keep following the route. But if that's not ideal, then you have another option. So yeah, hit pause. When you get to the view, and you'll know you're at the view because it is quite stunning, then you can carry on listening and keep enjoying the walk. Let's pause here for a moment. You get a phenomenal view of the city. I love looking out and just taking in the local ecosystem. The aim now is to provide 50% of our resources and maintain 50% of our wealth inside the city, which stretches from there to there. 75% from the district, 90% from the region of Bristol and Somerset, 95% nationally, and only the remaining 5% globally. You can see all the wind turbines on the hills of the city. Due to Bath's heritage status, we were late to adopt wind turbines, but renewable energy was inevitable. A number of engineers are now required to carry out inspections of the turbines past their end of life recently, but we need to keep them working for as long as possible. It's essential work, but I think it gets a bit dull after a while. That being said, there were some major issues a little while back that required some major retrofit to ensure the integrity of the masts. That was a fun job. We volunteered to do the checking on the actual structure. Sorry for all the interruptions, by the way. When you work as an engineer, being part of the community ecosystem is essential. It helps with foraging for materials, seeing local opportunities, working with community partners. As a result, you get to know a lot of people. It can be a little exhausting staying connected, but my network also enables me to work in a regenerative way. Sorry, my Fairphone has just alerted me to an energy jump. The local grid has more electricity than it can store, and it's free for the next hour. I just need to activate my home system to make use of the excess before it's gone. Will you excuse me and take in the view for a moment whilst I sort it out? Okay, so we're now going to head down into the city of Bath. You've got an option, actually. You can either just keep listening and look in the city and imagine that the next project is one of the projects that you can see in front of you, or you can pause and wait until you've crossed the river, and then from there hit play again. Either way works. Keeping going or take a pause and do something else for 5 minutes whilst you drop down into the city.
So we have arrived at our destination. We are waiting to meet with the site engineer. Before she arrives, let me explain. Most projects these days reuse the existing building. However, to ensure material is used widely, if a building has been converted twice in any 10-year period, it can't be converted a third time. It is deemed the building can no longer function as a whole and it needs to be deconstructed. The same is true if it has stood empty and unutilized for more than 12 months. This is to ensure all resources are well utilized. The building has just defaulted under the utilisation bill, and now we need to take it apart in such a way as to maximise the future opportunities. Foundations must be reused, all other materials must be converted into usable parts and shared with the city or region. While some may be reused on the site, we have to demonstrate that the reconstructed building is different enough in configuration that it will be of use. While this sounds simple, there is enough bureaucracy and challenge to make this approach much less attractive than adding the materials to the local inventory. Ah, here's the lead contractor who will be overseeing the deconstruction work. Hey, Theo, so good to see you again. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. I've got a new engineer with me. Are you okay if we explain what's going on as we go?
Another one? I thought you were winding down on your way to retirement. What's wrong with you? Never got used to the 3-day working week? So what have we got here?
Leo, it's really not good news, I'm afraid. Concrete frame, designed in 2018, constructed in 2022.
Damn, you sure? You know those are my least favourite, right?
Yeah, I know, I know. At least it isn't the AI-designed and quality-assured buildings of the late 2020s and early 2030s. They are the worst. The AI saw the gradual increase in load stiffness and interconnectedness in the name of robustness and assumed the buildings should be optimised in this direction. As the designs were black box, they were hard to check, and the initial reduction in material suggested they were improving the design. It took a while for us to realise what was going on. Coupled with this was the automated quality assurance. Whilst quality assurance is a good thing, no account was made for the reduced uncertainty as everything was being built to spec. Concrete strengths were typically up 20 newtons in this era, and the detailing is a nightmare. These buildings are designed to stand forever. Anyway, sorry for the rant. I'm so glad I wasn't in industry at that time. Back to the issue in hand. We need to think not just about extracting the parts, but upcycling whatever, wherever possible. It's a concrete flat slab, monolithic construction, designed for 10 kilonewtons a meter squared everywhere.
What about the stability?
The stability system is generally logical, so at least the deconstruction won't lead to instability and possible failure. Could be good to avoid a collapse with the financial penalties.
Any chance we can just take it apart?
Sadly not, no. Although deconstruction was understood, and engineers had to provide a deconstruction plan for BRIAM, generally it was ignored. The only way we're taking this one apart is by cutting it into bits.
Seriously? Have you got all the necessary permits? Despite improvements, cutting still emits far too much particulates and unusable waste than allowed without a permit. And the waste is just that, waste. We won't be able to recapture or reuse any of the materials lost in the cut.
Oh, I know. But until we found another way to do this, we have no choice.
Foundations?
Yeah, pile and pile caps. We need to reuse them in the next site use.
Please tell me we are looking at regular grids, fixed using the international standard. Actually, don't answer that. I already know.
Yeah, sorry. Column positions jump all over the place. This one is going to be a nightmare to reuse. We may need to consider converting the pile caps into a monolithic raft. Sorry, it's not better news. Next time, it will be an old building designed with sensible loads and construction in a way that can be reversed. I promise.
That's what you always say, but those buildings never seem to come up for deconstruction. It's always these over-designed monoliths, like the last one. You would have thought it would be easy to design a steel frame as demountable, but then they bonded everything together with concrete. Disconnecting the slabs from the beams was a total nightmare. How hard would it be to make the stud connection reversible? Sheesh, I wish everyone who designed a new building had to jump in time machine and deconstruct it. Then they would think differently about the whole thing. Seriously, how hard is it to design for deconstruction? It's not like they were designing the Pantheon. It's a department store. I mean, how could they not see that its useful life would be less than 30 years with no meaningful opportunity to reuse? Honestly.
Oh, Cleo, I totally hear you. I wish I'd taught for deconstruction much earlier, but I didn't. We are all learning, but you're right. If I had that time machine, I would have done so many things differently.
Okay, so pause there, and then we're going to head up the high street. So depending on where you are, once you get kind of to the corner, and I was just going to say near Marks and Spencer's, but Marks and Spencer's maybe is no longer there in the future. It's just literally just moved, kind of where the Metro Bank is. Then hit play again and keep walking up the main high street and keep listening to the recording. Before we finish for the day, there is one more project to see today. To get there, we'll walk through the city, centre of the city. It may seem amazing to you, but the biohighways that we've created down the middle of our streets used to be roads. Once vehicle access was limited and then banned in the city centre, the space became available for other users. As part of the citywide plan to create a connected natural network, we removed the roads and rewilded them. This removal of an impervious layer enabled water to again infiltrate into the ground and facilitated a regenerative approach to water management. However, it wasn't without its problems. Many of the properties were built with limited or no foundations, with masonry walls built directly off the ground, and the change in water level has led to some significant movement. Initially, the plan was to underpin all the buildings, but following an ecology risk analysis, the impact outweighed the benefit. So instead, the buildings were allowed to move. With managed cracking and constant monitoring, there was a lot of initial resistance to this approach due to the heritage nature of the buildings. But once the cost and ecological impact was fully understood by the community, the attitude changed. We also have revised our understanding of beauty. Cracks, well-treated, are now seen as a sign of something age and some things age and longevity, giving it a greater sense of beauty. I now love these old, slightly wonky buildings. We've had to intervene in a few places where the damage became more than just aesthetic, using repair strategies that are legible and add to the aesthetic of the structure. We would love to use biomaterials for these repairs, but generally the rigidity of the original structure mean that we need to approach them with stiffer materials such as steel. The buildings still retain their old facades as we are in the heritage zone. The bath stone still looks gorgeous. However, the buildings are all internally insulated and lined. In the denser areas of the city, roof gardens have, where possible, been added. And if not, growing pods exist inside the buildings to facilitate self-sufficiency. Everyone tries to grow their own food these days. By growing at least some of what you eat, it helps us understand our reliance and interdependence with the rest of nature. All of this requires engineering expertise. There was a moment in the late 2010s where people were worried we'd no longer need engineers, but we became busier than ever. In fact, I started working back in industry around 2032, not because I didn't love working at the university, but because there was so much to do, and anyone with engineering training was asked to consider going back into practice. For many years, I did both, but eventually, in my old age, the challenge of juggling two jobs became too much, so I now just work as an engineer. That being said, I continue to train engineers and I've continued to have excellent links with all the local universities. And in reality, the job of an engineer now looks really different to how it did 30 years ago. The idea of just designing a new building without reviewing all the options or considering the impact now seems so alien. I can't quite believe that is how we used to do it. Okay, so before we go to our final project for today, I thought it'd be nice to drop in on our future office. So if you follow the map and go over the River Avon kind of in the region of Coffee Number One is where the future office is located. So if you want to pause the recording and then you can, when you can see Coffee Number One, maybe from a distance and you can see that lovely bridge, it's quite a cool bridge, you can hit play again and start imagining the office as it is in 2050. Welcome to the office. Let me show you around. Firstly, this is a cooperative space. We are not an engineering practice so much as a community body who work collaboratively to try and enhance our local area. We have artists, accountants, architects, ecologists, civil engineers, geologists, designers, systems designers, photographers, journalists, and anyone else who is interested in working together. Many processes don't need the input of a structural engineer, but when they do, we become a leading member of the team as we enable the idea to happen. While experimentation is key and we are no longer worried about serviceability limit states in the same way, structural and ecological safety remain paramount, and we work together with the ecologists to ensure the project will not only lead to human and living system flourishing, but also to an acceptable probability of no harm to human life and ecology. We have learned to trust each other, to seek opportunity, to celebrate diversity, and to expect ideas from any member of the team as we search for the best way forward. The space is divided into four. At the front, we have our collaboration space. Most buildings avoid the overuse of glass, but here the glass is essential to create a connection with our community. The space enables us not just to collaborate in-house, but also with key stakeholders across the city. People are encouraged to share ideas with us. However, the glass also reminds us that the city is our office. We search for materials, spend time listening to the ecology and seeking opportunity. No moment is wasted. Every slow walk, each pause on a bench, every morning coffee, each provides feedback, data and understanding of the ecosystem. Design now isn't just collaborative, it is inclusive. Projects need to reflect the needs of the community. They need to be of benefit to as many people as possible, not just a few. We've worked hard to build community trust, to pursue projects that support the whole community. That trust means that people now share a wealth of information. As a result, we try as much as possible to have glass doors open, invite the city to come in as we observe the city as we work. The second space, which is connected to the first, is our testing lab. Here we build prototypes, test materials from both existing buildings and possible new materials. We are only a small setup and the big testing programs happen up at the university, which I continue to visit frequently. This space also talks to the community. It shows that we are constantly innovating. This isn't marketing, it's relationship building. I like to think that the community is proud of the work we do here. While non-engineers may struggle to understand our probabilistic analysis and use of advanced computing, the physical act of making and testing is accessible to all. And while we have a strong health and safety culture, as we value everyone who enters the labs, we also look to use this space in a collaborative way. We have a good selection of in-situ testing equipment, which we regularly lend to our community. While we could do the work ourselves, time is limited, and so we encourage, at least in the first instance, self-diagnosis. Insurance no longer covers structural integrity, and people are left to repair their own buildings. Most issues are due to the building being overly rigid, which leads to cracking, but sometimes they're more serious. By aiding self-diagnosis, we can focus on the safety critical issues. Behind the testing space is our archive. This is maintained in both digital and printed formats. While, as engineers and community enhancers, we are a protected organisation and have a higher guarantee of energy than most, power outages do still happen and can last for a while. As a result, we try and keep the most significant documents in printed form. We have a section on historical approaches to design, which includes a large number of design guides and codes of practice. We also have the most up-to-date process documents. We keep our own local material inventory. This covers the properties of locally growing materials like timber, bamboo, hemp and straw. We have information on local abundant materials such as earth and Bath's famous limestone. We have information on waste stream materials, both local to us and nationally. And we have information on key existing infrastructure, including as-built drawings, surveys and all material testing results. Our library of materials information enables us to design much more efficiently than national practices that don't have access to such a wealth of information. We also value analogue information for other reasons. The beneficial way reading a printed book helps restore our own well-being and the value we place on the information due to the precious nature of the artefacts or examples. The final space is the Focused Analysis Lab. This is a space for deep thinking. We have high-end computers for advanced analysis. We no longer run simple linear analysis, instead we use enhanced processing power to run non-linear analysis to optimise design, and if possible we run a full probabilistic analysis. That way we can better understand how likely something is to fail. Where projects have a negative impact, we run a detailed risk analysis to ensure that the risk of failure is optimised against the environmental risks. All projects of this nature must be agreed and signed off by building control and must be in alignment with both approved document A, structures, and X, ecosystem impact. However, the work of a designer is not just the analysis. It is all the thought and process that occurs before the analysis. In fact, the analysis really is just the icing on the cake. So, in this space, we have both digital and analog drawing boards. And each process has a series of drawings which captures the full thought process behind the design, linked to both the digital archive and the stakeholder conversations and analysis. This space also contains the space to dwell, to think deeply, to make systems connections, and to record them in whatever manner is most comfortable, from video to scribbled notes. This dwelling space includes immersive technology. While sitting in an ecosystem is highly beneficial, it's also limited by human time. This immersive space enables us to speed up and slow down the cycles of the space and to add our interventions and see their impact. Humans interact with space in our linear time domain driven by the rhythm of our heart and breathing, the sun and the moon. But as we immerse ourselves in the ecosystem, it's important to recognize the different cycles and rhythms the immersive technology enables us to do this. Okay, so now you've seen the office, it's going to be time to hit pause again. Just before you do, just to say the next site is an existing school building. It will still be a school in 2050, so do just be mindful of the fact it's a school. Obviously, don't try and go in or even kind of stand outside for a long period of time, but you've got plenty of time to take in the story as you walk past. So just enjoy walking past, and yeah, I really hope you enjoy the last stretch of the future walk. Welcome to David Attenborough High School. Today we'll be doing some structural integrity testing of an outdoor classroom that the students have built themselves. We have a long history with the school. We've done a variety of reuse projects and have carried out extensive checking of the existing structures to extend the design life and assess revised loading. We now have a detailed database of information which makes future assessments straightforward. We can use probabilistic methods to check the capacity of the existing structure, which enable us to make much less conservative decisions. We've reviewed changes in loading for increased water storage, but also for changes in the curriculum. Schooling now is much more practical. Students have to build their own keyboard before they can learn to type. And as indoor growing becomes more common, especially in areas of high population density, all schools now have growing labs where students learn to grow and monitor their own food production. For some, it gives them access to food that they don't have at home, and we are trying to work out how we can improve access over the holidays. We've enabled the addition of extra stories on the roof. We had to carry out detailed testing to ensure the existing roof slab had capacity. We used AI to carry out a series of probabilistic analysis using quantum computing and parallel processing. But in honesty, we only do this when necessary. Most of the time, a good sketch and omega L squared over 8 is enough. For the new stories, we try and design with lightweight, renewable and flexible materials. The reduced weight obviously helps to keep the loading down. The renewable materials are part of the local sourcing strategy. We could use abundant materials like earth, but not on top of an existing building. We have carried out some trials with bamboo, but for now, timber remains our preference due to the local availability of materials. We also now try to make structures flexible. Rather than design for limited deflection and vibration, we found that we can achieve much more materially efficient solutions by allowing structures to move. It took a while to resolve some of the waterproofing and facade details, but the carbon savings have been significant. Rigid structures are now limited to buildings of future historical importance, and a permit is required to design in that way. We can still use steel, and we are starting to see concrete slowly return after it was banned in the 2030s, but these materials are used sparingly and are saved predominantly for rigid structures. We use blocks created from aggregate that is a product of carbon capture technology and cement-free binders to lift the new story out of the wet zone to prevent rotting. In addition, all the materials are grown locally, and where possible, fixings are also locally grown timber nails. We also monitor the structure. We have highlighted areas of risk and have attached strain gauges and accelerometers which alert us to any significant displacement or change in stiffness. The pupils are also required to take analog readings to ensure the electronic ones are working, as most are a decade or more beyond their working life. This approach helps us to monitor the health of the building and ensure we don't overload the structure. It also alerts us to long-term movements and changes in soil conditions due to climatic impacts. Today's visit, though, is a little more fun. Every student is involved in designing and building their own classroom. We carried out an initial assessment to ensure the design didn't pose any major risk, and now we are back to inspect the building before they utilise it. The building is constructed from waste and reclaimed materials. Each year's project can utilise materials from the classroom which was constructed the year before, and the first job is to deconstruct and inventory what is available. The students then source other waste that can be used in the construction. Anything that isn't used must find a new place in the ecosystem. Nothing can be wasted. It is very challenging but highly rewarding. People use leftover materials to make furniture, clothes, sculptures. Students are involved across a wide number of disciplines, but everyone participates and the buzz around the project is incredible. This is a different type of engineering again. We're not able to carry out lots of detailed analysis. There is no probabilistic design. Instead, we use our intuition and experience. And at 72, I sure have a lot of that. We load test the structure by pushing it and pulling it. We have some simple tools like instrumented ratchet straps that provide force displacement readings. The main aim is to consider how ductile failures will be, but What warnings will the structure provide and where the risks lie? We normally limit use to wind speeds below 40 kilometres an hour to be safe. Whenever I visit the school, there's always another task that needs to be carried out. I try and distribute the work fairly across the different engineering cooperatives in the city. We all share our work. It helps to build robust relationships. I'm not going to live forever, and I certainly hope to retire at some point soon, at which point a new main contact will need to step forward and take over the role. The aim isn't to use the relationship to maximise profits, but to build long-term and sustainable workflows. By sharing projects, we can work together in search of abundance. For a while, people were worried that the role of the engineer would disappear with the advent of AI and advanced computing. But in reality, it has just led to a diversity of jobs, more creativity, more hands-on experience, and the role of an engineer now much more closely matches how I imagined it would be when I was a boy. And that's great. Okay, so that's it. We're done. We've toured the city of Bath. We've seen what it might look like in 2050. Hopefully it's been an enjoyable and optimistic experience. And yeah, I just really hope you found that a very different way to learn and imagine and immerse yourself in the kind of the regenerative design subject. From here, it's up to you where you go, really. If you want to complete the loop, feel free to. But I tried to start and finish in Oldfield Park because I figure that's where most of you are based. And so, yeah, have a fantastic rest of your day and enjoy being back in 2026 or whatever year it is you find yourself in. Obviously, I might use this for more than 1 year. So maybe you'll find yourself in the year that you hopefully departed in and all will be good. Hopefully our time machine hasn't gone wonky and you haven't found yourself in a completely different year. And yeah, have a great day. Thank you.